This is CliffCentral.com.
Let's get to Justice, and then we'll get back to the Cussie Tops because they're back. Justice Malala, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Justice, always the better for hearing your voice.
Ah, it's so nice to be back. It's so nice to be here.
Good morning, Justice. My name is Poppy Njongana. Nice to meet you on Skype.
Hello, Poppy. So, I've heard your voice.
Justice, I was hoping you're going to be in the studio today, obviously, because I like to hang out with you. But then you could have met Poppy. It could have been her first Burning Platform.
I know. I was told, no, everyone's away. And then I find that, you know, you two beauties are around. It's not fair. It's not fair.
All right, Justice, well, let's not beat around the bush anymore. There is a lot going on today, and Gareth asked me to ask you a few questions, but I'm sure you've got everything under control. So what is burning right now on your platform?
Thanks, Ben. You know, it's quite something. I've been away, as you know, and you think, no, when you get back, South Africa will be nice and relaxed. and you know, everything will be nice and smooth and we won't have anything to talk about. But it's quite something. I get back and yesterday I see that on my diary that the king of the Zulus, King Goodwill Zwelithini, had an imbizo. And Amabutho, the warriors, turned up, and all sorts of other people turned up, and he wanted to talk about land. Now, you'll know that for the past few weeks, the parliamentary committee has been going around to Limpopo, to Mpumalanga, where have they been? Northern Cape, and on to other provinces, talking about should Section 25 be changed or not, and so forth. So King Goodwill Zwelithini calls his July 4th meeting, and I was amazed by just how deja vu it was. It just reminded me of way back in the early 1990s when the IFP, all sorts of other people were saying, don't touch the Zulu people, don't talk about this, and so forth. And I felt a real sense of disquiet about some of the messaging that was going on yesterday. Firstly, I thought, why is it if we discuss the issue of land and expropriation of land without compensation and the return of land to ordinary black people, why is it that we are now being told that no, the land that belongs to King Goodwill or the Ingonyama Trust shouldn't be touched? You know, for me, I think we need a conversation about traditional leadership in South Africa. We need a discussion about what the Constitution says we are. And it says that the citizen is at the heart and center of things in this country. And so actually, traditional leadership, royalty, is not one elected by anyone. You know, just by being born, you know, Poppy or Ben, you just get born and, oh, I've got all these powers. Well, we don't work like that. It's a democratic state. And so if the people do say the land must belong to the state, for example, then you know, traditional leaders just need to accept that that's what the people want and they can't stop it. So I thought the king was quite interesting because he said, what's happening to us is what happened to us 119 years ago. You remember this is when the Anglo-Zulu wars were taking place, when attempts were made to take over the land of the Zulus by the English, and King Cetshwayo was arrested and sent to Robben Island and so forth and so forth. And he says, now that a democratic state says, let's talk about land, this is about it. And he seemed to imply that we could have a war on our hands if nothing is done about it. Secondly, he said there were some people who said at that meeting that, yeah, all foreigners must leave and anyone who is not Zulu must leave. Now, if that is the case, if everyone who is not Zulu born leaves the KwaZulu-Natal or leaves those parts that are considered KwaZulu, you can imagine things will be very different. So I thought it was there were quite a few dangerous messages that came out of that meeting that we need to talk about as South Africans, really. There was much talk, particularly about, no, KwaZulu-Natal will go on its own and the rest of you lot in Johannesburg and elsewhere can go on your own, have your own state, and there will be an independent KwaZulu state. And it don't have Natal in it, by the way. It will just be KwaZulu. And it will run its own economy, its own affairs, and so forth and so forth.
So is that a possibility? Because that was Gareth's question and reasoning as well.
But I mean, Gareth made the analogy that what if KZN actually became like a Singapore? So Durban was Singapore, and that region was then made into its own sovereign kind of thing.
Well, the first thing you'd have to do is to say, okay, which parts of KwaZulu-Natal, the present KwaZulu-Natal, are KwaZulu or fall under the Ingonyama Trust?
Exactly,
Ekurhuleni,
yeah.
For example, doesn't fall under the jurisdiction of the Ingonyama Trust. So Ulundi maybe could become your Singapore, your nation state all on its own. We know that in the 70s, the IFP ran KwaZulu and Ulundi through to 1994. Did they turn it into a Singapore or a Rwanda? No, not quite. So you'd have a problem about what exactly are the borders of this new thing that you're talking about. My view is, you know, if you start going down that road, imagine the traditional leaders in Limpopo start saying, "Ah, well, I'm going it alone as well." And then, you know, the Venda King says, "I'm going it on my own too." And so you have a little Swaziland there, and you have a little Bapedi something there, and you have, you know, in the Eastern Cape, who do you go to? Do you go to the Chief Nongonyane or some other chief and so forth? Where does it start and where does it end? Are we going to end up a bit like Europe, the French saying, no, we are this, and the English saying, oh, we are that, and then everyone going their own way? I'm not sure that this is the route to go.
Well, of course
not. And where we're going to end up with this. It sounds quite reactionary, and it sounds like people are making threats which are not healthy at all. So it worries me. You know, could it be run brilliantly, beautifully, and so forth? What's the economy of this new state?
Exactly, Justice. I mean, like Vince here on the message just said that if he takes KZN away, he's still going to get the money from South Africa, because that's essentially how he survives, isn't it? On these,
that's
these
exactly.
Yeah.
It would be interesting. I know, Ben, you like to spend. Poppy, we still need to find out what your spending habits are like. But if you look at the at King Gudu Zwelithini's spending habits, I think his budget to March 2018 was 66 million rand per annum. So, you know, there's a lot of cash being spent by the royal family, by the king himself. That's just his budget, by the way. So you'll remember with the former KwaZulu and the former homelands as well, Bophuthatswana or Venda or Leboa and all those in the 80s, they were all getting money from the so-called central government. And I don't think that would change. You'd end up with all these enclaves holding out their hand and saying, give me, give me, give me, and you'd still be paying. So I don't think that would end. So, you know, it's sort of, What is the thinking behind this? And also, you think about Johannesburg and say, okay, what is the king has called for all Zulus to contribute some money to go to court and fight any attempt to take away the land, if you will, take away is a law, is a strong word, to take away the land of the Zulus. Now, are the guys from KwaZulu-Natal who consider themselves Zulu going to pay some cash into the Zulu King's account for that? Who's going to pay exactly? You know, the idea of who we are, my parents come from Limpopo, but I was born in Joburg, I've lived in Joburg most of my life. Does that mean I consider my leader to be Cyril Ramaphosa, the president of South Africa, or King or Queen Mujaji, where my parents come from? I don't even think about Queen Mujaji, you know? So this stuff is quite something. It's quite something. It's interesting to watch.
But I mean, ultimately, this will also probably blow over like anything else that happens around this guy, because as another person pointed out, he's a bit of a shit stirrer when you really break it down in the greater scheme of what's happening in this country.
Well, I do think he's very angry about former President Kgalema Motlanthe saying that, you know, traditional leaders are a bit of a tin pot dictators. They have no... Remember that we didn't give too much power to the traditional leaders when we wrote the constitution in 94, 95, 96.
Yeah.
We gave them some ceremonial powers. Some chiefs still, you know, solve cases in the villages and so forth. But we pay them. We pay them a salary. We pay them, you know, we buy them cars and so forth and so forth. Will something happen? I worry about chauvinism. I don't like it when we, all South Africans, are now being told that, no, the Zulus have to be treated in a special way because they are special people, or the Xhosas are this and they are special in this way, or the Bapedi are this and so forth, or the Bavenda are this. It, you know, this sort of chauvinism that, no, we are the people of Shaka and we are special. It's we all South African citizens. We all... vote, and we get one vote each, and I think that's the choice we made, that this is a democratic state, this is a democratic country, this is the way it's run. So I feel that the Zulu King has ascribed to himself powers that he doesn't have. This is a democratic state. It will make decisions. It made decisions in 94 that we will keep some form of traditional leadership. And he should realize that no king, queen, chief in South Africa is voted for. And so this idea that because, you know, Poppy is, was born to a royal family gives her special powers, it doesn't exist. It doesn't work. It's a throwback. And quite frankly, in my view anyway, traditional leadership is a decoration. It's nice to go and see that, oh, we've got a lovely king here and he has, you know, a reed dance once a year and some other traditional stuff that he does. It's very nice. But traditional leadership is not elected. The people of South Africa elect a president, a parliament, an executive, a judiciary. And those people are the people who run the country. So we'll see how it goes. It might blow over, but I worry that it won't blow over, actually, Ben. I think that it's encouraging. If you look at what happened yesterday after that meeting, there was a statement issued by other traditional leaders saying, yes, we support him. He mustn't take away our land. Now, when they say our land, they mean chiefs or traditional leaders' land. Actually, the land belongs to South Africans. If we do go ahead and say, okay, the land belongs to the state or whatever, you know, they have to go and make arguments for themselves that, no, this is the best way to do it. They win the argument on the basis of the strength of what they say, not, oh, you know, I'm the chief, what I say is sacrosanct. It's not. And it can be, because that's undemocratic in itself. So will it blow over? I think the land issue is something that's that's gained pace, that's going strong. It will be interesting to see, and it's happening in the next week and a half, when that parliamentary committee, you've seen them going around the country, Julius Malema is on it, Musiwa Lekota is on it, Vincent Phillips is the chair, he's an ANC MP. I think all those, all those guys, when the hearings go to KwaZulu-Natal, it will be interesting for me to see whether ordinary KwaZulu-Natal residents, what they have to say about this and whether they want the land that belongs to the Zulu king to remain with the Zulu king or not. I suspect that you'll find that many Zulus that allegedly want the Zulu king to be the only person in charge of all that land won't agree with him. It will be interesting to see EFF members in KwaZulu-Natal presenting to that committee. So sure. I don't think some of it will blow over, some of it don't blow over. The one thing that the king did finish off by saying was that he's tired of being disrespected by small children. I think he was referring to Julius Malema there. It will be interesting to see how the EFF responds to it. But the key thing for me is to be careful about this sort of chauvinism that has reared its head, that some people are special and some people are not. It's not good enough.
Yeah, well, speaking of some people that aren't that special, I think there's some people right now who'd feel very, very unloved, and that is the state grant. What's happening with the whole SASSA dilemma again? I thought we're past this.
You've got a sense of humor. We're not past it. You know, the past, what, 3 years now, we've been talking about the social development ministry. It was headed by Minister Batabile Dlamini. You will know that payment of social grants was done by Cash Paymaster Services, CPS. That contract was declared by the courts of South Africa to be illegal and unlawful, and that it was granted illegally and unlawfully, and that it should be scrapped, it should be removed. What then happened was that the ministry and Minister Dlamini in particular continued to push back. They said, no, we'll wait, no, we can't do this, and so forth. Now, many people have called for a state bank to be established in South Africa. We do have an entity with a banking license, and that's the South African Post Office. Mark Barnes, who's the CEO of the Post Office, has said that we can do this thing. We can pay the grants. Well, after fighting not for the Post Office, which belongs to the government, to not pay, Minister Dlamini was fired or was moved around in February by Cyril Ramaphosa, and action started to begin this. 700,000 people, or rather 700,000 recipients, have been moved to the new system with the South African Post Office. But because it was done hastily, because it was done quickly, lo and behold, the system does not know how to take and process the volume, the number of recipients that are in the system. So from July 1, as people went to get their grants, they find that, oh no, the money reflects in my account, but I can't get it out. They go to Checkers or the other grocery stores where you can withdraw money, and they find that the lady behind the till or the gentleman behind the till says, oh yes, I can see that the money has been deposited, but we can't give it to you because the system just isn't connecting. And so you have 700,000 poor people, because to actually receive a grant, either you're a pensioner who doesn't have a big enough pension, or you're a child whose parents can't afford to give them, don't have enough money to look after that child without help. And so these are very poor people. And in this month, the coldest, some of the coldest days of the year, you have people getting up in the morning at 4 a.m., 3 a.m., going to town to try and get their social grant, and they are not getting it. And we have to ask ourselves, what kind of country is it when we treat people so shabbily, so badly? And my view is that this is consequent. For years and years, we've said this needs to be done properly, a proper handover and so forth. And Minister Dlamini in particular refused again and again. And now you have this situation where we can't pay people. And, you know, we have to think as well about how do revolutions happen? Imagine if poor people are not receiving their grants. If this problem went to 2 million, 3 million recipients, it would become disaster out there, because what you'd have are people rioting, people taking up, taking to the streets saying, where is my money? And you could have widespread protests in South Africa, because people are hungry, people are desperate, and people want a solution. So this stuff isn't just, oh, you know, we're treating poor people badly. It's also about the security of the state, about the stability of South Africa. And if we continue to do this, people will take to the streets. There are 12 million people who are paid by SASSA every month.
12 million.
There are actually 17 million people who receive social grants. So some of them are children. So it might be a mother in a family. She gets her own grant and the children's grants. So maybe she's got two or three or four people that she receives on behalf of. So that's 12 million recipients. If this sort of problem continues, then you know, it has consequences. It could be very bad, and it's something that we have to think about very, very seriously, about the stability of South Africa.
Well, Justice, at the risk of sounding cynical, this is playing right into the EFF's hands, isn't it? Because this is their kind of voter base they're hoping to sweep up.
Yes. I mean, the more the ANC, you know, we are maybe 11 months away from an election. Let's say the election is held in May next year. That means that we are now also in election season. If the ANC doesn't realize that the more it mismanages things like payment of social grants, the more and the further it's pushing its own voters into the EFF's hands or someone else's hands. So, you know, it's forget about the stability of the country. Politically, I'm amazed that Cyril Ramaphosa and his executive in the ANC are standing by and watching as this happens, because quite frankly it's quite a thing. It's the one thing that would drive people to look elsewhere. It's their stomachs. It's their livelihood. It's they're poor today. If you go to Limpopo today, there's cloud. It's been raining, and people are thinking, do I want this to continue to happen? Who can do this better? And they'll go to that other party next year. So it's there's a political reality and aspect to it that the ANC needs to think about very seriously.
I mean, in times of desperation, that's when politicians' lies are fastestly lapped up. I mean, that's just one equals two.
There will certainly be people pointing it out, and the EFF has done a fantastic job of pointing this sort of things out. So I think it's certainly something that that the ANC needs to think about very seriously.
But it just seems like the ANC are scoring quite a few own goals at the moment, because I mean, what's now? Super's now got a new job. Tony Ngeni's come back. Everyone's favorite, Mr. J.G. Zuma, he still seems to have a job with the elections. Like, what's really going on here?
Well, I think the ANC, you're right. Just on the social grant issue, yesterday the ANC issued a statement saying to the government, guys, we need to think about what's happening with the petrol price. So think about it. you are queuing in Toyando. You're not getting your social grant because there's a problem with the payment system. Then, in the middle of it, you took a taxi to get to town, and you're told that, oh, petrol price has gone up, so taxi fare is going up. If taxi fare goes up, it means your money is not going as far as it used to go. There'll be people saying groceries are going up, price of groceries are going up, everything goes up, and you turn around and say, who's mismanaging this economy? It's the ANC. So the ANC is at the real level, at the level of governance and managing the economy, it's really shooting itself in the foot. But to your point about what's happening with Supra and with Tony Engeni and so forth, I'm amazed that the ANC is facing what will probably be its toughest election since 1994. And yet it keeps on going back to people who are totally discredited to be its leaders into this election. Think about it. Just 1 month ago, in the Northwest, about 6 weeks ago, in the Northwest province, people were protesting, were blocking roads, were burning buildings, saying Supra Mahuma Pelu must go. Mm-hmm. And what does the ANC do? They appoint him the head of the party's political school. That means that this is the man who's going to teach ANC leaders about this is what we stand for, this is what our organization's about, and so forth and so forth. Can you believe it? This is a man whose own people said, we don't want him. We don't want him. He must leave. My best thing about Supra Mahuma Pelu is that as he led the Northwest, and he's still the chair of the ANC in the Northwest, by the way, it's quite interesting to note that there was a mayor, and I've made a song and dance about it. This mayor, what was the small town that she was in? There was a choice for
the guest house on the road.
Yes. Thank you, Ben. She built a tarred road to her own guest house instead of to the local clinic. And it's like, what has happened to her? Nothing. She's still around. It's all okay. It's all good for her. So this is the person the ANC makes the head of its political school. Tony Engeni was found guilty by a court of law in the 2000s for accepting a discount from an arms dealer while he was head of Parliament's defense committee, and therefore that arms dealer got a bit of something in the arms deal of the late 90s, early 2000s. Mm-hmm. Now, we can have an argument about, was it right, was it not right? But he was convicted of the thing. So what happens is that the ANC appoints him the head of its working group on corruption. It's like, are you serious about corruption or are you not serious? When you take someone who's been convicted and make him the head of that group, you're saying, actually, we're okay with this sort of thing. And you say, how tone deaf can you be? This, you know, Julius Malema is going to stand on a stage. Musi Maimane is going to stand on a stage. The first thing he's going to say, these people are not serious about corruption. And what argument are you going to
And they'll be right. And they'll be right when they say it.
They'll be absolutely right.
I'm starting to think that Cyril really, really just doesn't have any power.
You know, Poppy, many of us are starting to say, what exactly, who's running this thing? Was that the line from that kiddies movie? Who's in charge of this thing? Because you look at some of the decisions that are being made and you say, is this the new dawn? Is this Tuma Mina? Because quite frankly, if this is the new dawn, the ANC is in trouble because its new dawn doesn't look good at all. You know?
That's just it.
And I think, you know, former President Jacob Zuma is facing so many charges. He's going to court on corruption charges from the arms deal. There's the state capture inquiry starting and so forth. And what does the ANC say? This will be one of our key people who will be canvassing for support into the 2019 elections. So someone who's going to court one day and the next day will be on a stage saying vote ANC because we are clean and so forth and so forth. It's amazing. It's like the ANC, maybe we should have, and you know, Ben, you guys should actually ask Cyril Ramaphosa for an interview and ask him, do you want the ANC to lose? Because imagine.
It starts to look like that.
We just wanna take a rest now. We're gonna give someone else a chance. Because if you feel a team with Supra and Tony and Jacob Zuma, oh my word, it's quite something.
Oh, wow. Justice, we are rattling out of time quite quickly, but we need to talk about this road accident fund, and they must have the most comfortable chairs in the entire planet. and I'm sure you've got some interesting takes on this.
I just saw that story on Sunday in the Sunday Times. I don't know if you guys picked it up, but I have to say the road accident fund is bankrupt. That's one.
It's bankrupt despite the fact it gets 1.90 rand of every litre of our petrol.
Every litre. So at the moment, you're going to leave the studio now. You're going to stop at your local filling station. You're going to put in every 16 rand that's a litre of petrol. They take 1.93 rand. Huh? 1.93 rand. And what do they do? Now, I want you guys to check out those chairs in the studio, and I'm going to check them next week when I come through. Because they were renting these chairs for 1,666 per month. What kind of bum do these people have?
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of bum needs what? This chair is the most expensive chair, an office chair, 1,666 rand per month. Who are these people?
But Justice, it's like, who's in charge of this? Like, who is doing this? Someone must have an uncle or a cousin or a nephew or somewhere in this pipeline that's getting this money. Do we know who this person is?
I actually don't know. The last I looked at the Royal Accident Fund, you know, every time I look at the Road Accident Fund, it's bankrupt or it's going a bit haywire. They can't pay people, they can't pay lawyers, they can't pay this, they can't do this. And we continue to pay them. You continue to give them a huge whack of money. And lo and behold, it's not going to paying out victims of accidents. It's not going out to making sure that children of people involved in accidents get to have some sort of decent life. It's renting chairs. But if you want to see the anatomy of corruption in our country, this is it. Why would you rent a chair for 1,666 rand a month? You can buy an office chair forever and have it working for years and years. For that amount of money.
You could buy it forever. You can't put it any better than that.
And forever. I mean, just imagine. I mean, Poppy, you're sitting there. Think about the chair you're sitting on. Think about it. How special does my bum have to be given a chair that's 1,000? Let's put it in context. A child grant in South Africa is just less than 500 rand.
Oh, wow.
We are taking 1,600 rand a month renting a chair. I mean, an old age pension, I think, is about 1,420 or 480 rand. We pay a pensioner less money than we pay for a chair at the Road Accident Fund. There is something fundamentally wrong with our thinking. And you know, it's today's Thursday. Call the Road Accident Fund after the show. The person, the CEO, has not been fired and they will not be fired. No. It's just okay.
Jeez.
Yeah. Well, but I don't want to leave you all feeling so depressed. All I want to say is that they must have very special bums at the Road Accident Fund to need this kind of comfort.
Absolutely outrageous. Justice, we do have to cut it off right there, though. Thanks for your time, as always. Justice Malala on the Burning Platform, brought to you by Nandos. If you do not follow Justice on Twitter, well, you kind of have to. It's at Justice Malala.
This is CliffCentral.com.